hey. Thanks so much for joining me on the Cogdie Podcast. I'm your host, Gary. In case you're new to the show, I'm the editor and chief controller charger here at Fortner.com. Yep, making sure that wireless controllers are fully charged is a big responsibility, and it's my job to do it. You may have seen me as the DM for Quest for the Cure or on Ice Hole's Rime of the Frostmaiden, as Cicero on Cyberpunk Independence, as Doc on Scribes and Scrolls, or sailing on the SS Failboat over at Talon and Claw. If you like what you hear, please subscribe to the show or follow us on social media at fortnerd.com. That's at fortnerd, D-O-T-C-O-M, or both. Both works for me, but whatever works for you is fine. There's not a lot I want to talk about this week, but the big news is this past weekend was Quest for the Cure. Our incredible cast helped us raise more than $500. That $500 puts us just over $21,000 raised since we first started our quest in September of last year. A shout out to Ed Greenwood, Amy Lindazura, Emma Wakelin, Blair Brown, Eric Morden, and of course Hawkmere, who is an entertaining guest contributor on the show this month. Without you, there would be no funds, there would be no fun. Thank you, as always, for joining our quest. The next episode of Quest for the Cure is July 31st, and as always, you can win a seat. More details to come in the coming weeks. Today, my guests are Dustin and Devin from D4. Dustin is a professional in the film industry who's worked on films such as Avengers Infinity War and Endgame, Captain America Civil War, Hunger Games Mockingjay, and a host of others. Devin, too, is a professional in the film industry who's worked on Guardians of the Galaxy 2, Constantine, Doom Patrol, Stranger Things, and more. These two are the co-DMs for D4, a weekly 5th edition livestream show featuring the BFGs, an unlikely collection of companions. It's one of the most popular streaming shows around, and airs weekly on Rock Punch ATL and on the D&D Twitch channel. The story is woven through a highly customized version of Waterdeep Dragon Heist. You may recognize that name, but you don't know the whole story. I hope you enjoy my chat with Dustin and Devin. Dustin, Devin, thank you so much for joining me. I really appreciate it.
We're happy to be here.
Yeah, so happy to be here.
I always like to start my interviews with a very similar question because we're all sort of united in this passion of Dungeons & Dragons and tabletop RPGs, and I love knowing where that spark of interest came from. So I'd like to ask what your first experience with Dungeons & Dragons was. Dustin, I know that I think yours might have been related to a video game, and Devin, yours, you were sort of thrown into the fire against some ice devils. Is that right?
Wow. All right. Okay. Yes. Yes, you are. You are correct. My older brother was like, hey, you're playing a game with me. And I was like, all right. And it was second edition. I'm glad I don't have to memorize the Thaco chart anymore. And I think I played a ranger and we went up against some ice devils. But good job,
that's
sir.
It. Yeah. And yeah, mine was Baldur's Gate, the original Baldur's Gate. It was my first kind of foray into D&D mechanics, and because Baldur's Gate used the second edition mechanics and rules with ThatCo and all of that, that's kind of where I learned all of that and was my like first foray into like fully immersive role-playing games, like RPGs, games, and video games and whatnot. And so, yeah, that was my kind of first foray, you know, other than like growing up watching the Dungeons & Dragons cartoon. Before I even knew it, I was just like, "Oh, this is a really cool show with a guy with an energy bow that I always wanted to be when I was a little kid." And we were watching and playing, but that was didn't even really know what it was other than it was just a cool fantasy cartoon when I was, you know, knee high to a grasshopper.
What was it that drew you in? Obviously, a big portion of your personal time is spent playing Dungeons and Dragons. I know each of you is playing in multiple campaigns a month, plus you're doing D4. What was it about Dungeons and Dragons that sort of drew you in? When did you know that, yep, this was for me and this is going to be a lifelong passion?
So for me, I actually started LARPing before I played my first campaign. And so, you know, we were literally immersed into the fantasy genre, running around, you know, in full makeup and prosthetics and hitting our friends with foam swords and, you know, throwing spell packets, birdseed, like fabric packets at our friends, and, you know, a group of my friends got together with a friend of ours that we met there and he was like, hey, I'm going to start this D&D. And it was when third edition just was like, it was just released. And so we started at the cusp of third edition in this campaign, and we ended up playing all the way through the release of 3.5, and we merged into 3.5. And I was just like, I'm in love. Like, I love LARPing. I love being out, but to sit at the table and the relationships and the just encounters that are built from being at the table, I was like, oh yeah, this is definitely for me.
For me, I think it kind of in the same boat. I played small individual, like, you know, I never played in a long campaign or anything. I play a game or two there just because it was fun, typically with my older brother or some friends that were just like, and it wasn't always Dungeons and Dragons. It could have been another different TTRPG.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then I've always been into costumes and characters and stories and stuff like that, doing many, many years of haunted house work. And that's where I met this guy, and he bothered me for a year. Come play my LARP. Come play my LARP. And I was like, look, I'm nerdy, but I'm not that nerdy. And then one day I went out and I tried it, and I had an absolute blast. Caused the first permakill character in a game. And then I got hooked. And then, you know, from there, I'm just created all of these, these relationships with all these other people that love to play D&D all the time. And so it just became a part of my life, and telling stories and creating characters just kind of naturally flows into that. So
is that like the first permakill? Is that like a notch on your belt? Do you hold that a badge of honor, or did you feel kind of bad about it?
I didn't actually do the killing blow. It was my NPC's actions that sparked a PvP situation. So I was the catalyst in a domino effect. So I don't feel the guilt. I would say a little bit of both. It's kind of like that, wow, I can't believe I caused that, but it also sparked the whole, like, this is chaos and I love it. but also, it always sucks when somebody's character permanently dies. Yeah. So there's that weight that comes with it.
So obviously both of you are the DMs for D4, and your game is unique because you both take on the role of Dungeon Master simultaneously. I'm really curious how you came up with the idea of the two DM system. How exactly do you make it work, and why does it work, do you think?
So it again stems back to LARPing. So Devin said, I begged him and begged him and begged him and poked him and prodded him to finally come out and play this LARP that we had just started, that I was co-running. Mm-hmm. And he was playing for a little bit. And then as we were doing, we were building props together. And so we were always like writing and coming up with ideas and just kind of bouncing ideas off of each other. And he started to help me run stories at the LARP. And then we just started running full-time stories at the LARP. And we co-ran stories together for about 10 years at the LARP. And then with real life and how just time-consuming it was, we ended up retiring from LARPing. And I was wrapping up a home game of like 3 years, had just come back from Stream of Many Eyes, and I was like, hey, what do you think about, you know, streaming the next game, and pitched the idea of co-DMing it, since it had been a few months since we had run anything together, and, you know, I missed telling stories with him. And so I pitched the idea, and Devin was like, yeah, let's do it.
One of the things I don't think we've ever said in an interview is D4 is actually the first campaign that we've DM'd together as a tabletop RPG.
Mm-hmm. That is true.
But we do have the 10 years of experience doing the LARP system, which is even more yes and, even more chaotic. Because you just have, instead of having only 5 people at your table, you have like 30 to 50 in your game, you know, constantly changing and making decisions on the fly. And the most communication that you have is sometimes through a walkie-talkie across the entire camp. And so we got used to telling stories that way. We knew what story beats we wanted. We knew what kind of characters and NPCs we wanted and how they were going to react to certain things. So it really comes down to a lot of trust. That's the biggest reason why it works.
Right.
A lot of communication before and after game, because, you know, one of us might make a mistake. And thankfully, we can mute our mic right now. If you watch our show, you see us click the mic or hear our players talk. Oh, they're talking. Yep. They muted the mic. They're talking. Well, that's typically when we're trying to clarify something between each other. And when we're in the live studio, we have to 100% just yes and, because the players will hear us communicating. And then we'll talk about it afterwards about, hey, I know you made this decision. How can we make that work better? Because it kind of messes up this little point or that little point and stuff like that. So it's all about communication, and trust is the biggest reason why it works. The second reason why it works is because we've just been working together for so long.
Yeah, we always joke we are one brain cell. You know, we are Jaeger pilots, and, you know, D4 is our giant mech that we use to fight Jaegers. So we are in tandem a lot. We love to tell the same style of story. We're very similar storytellers. So we've been telling stories long enough that we're pretty good about reading where one of us is going in a direction. And so playing off the yes and is pretty easy, because we can see pretty much where we can read where the person is going. Sometimes we catch each other off guard, and like Devin said, we have to be like, all right, that was an interesting choice. How do we fit that into the narrative?
Or
what was your thought process to fit this into the narrative? We talk about it. And then we're like, okay, cool. Yeah, I see your point. I see why you did that. That makes more sense than what we were originally talking about.
Yeah, et cetera. I was going to say, then sometimes that surprise is a good surprise of like, why did you do that? And then like, he'll explain or I'll explain. And it's just like, oh, that makes 100% sense. I did not see that. And that's another reason why co-DMing is so great, is because it's more than one brain. And it's like having a co-writer or someone that you can bounce ideas off of until you have a more polished product, a more polished story with like little nuances and stuff like that. Something that you didn't see before that just enhances the story, in our opinion.
Yeah, and getting to play multiple NPCs off of each other, like playing off of one another, is
so good.
Yeah. Probably the greatest benefit of having a co-DM, having another DM in the seat. I've solo DM'd forever. I am a forever DM, and I'm spoiled now, because having Devin next to me, I feel more confident, and the fact that I don't have to have all the conversations with myself, I can, you know, and playing off that energy of one another really helps immerse the players more, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one of the things that I love about having Devin next to me up here in the DM seat.
So it's just not you talking to yourself for 20 minutes. You can actually have a more realistic conversation.
Exactly.
Yep.
The only time that gets a little bit difficult is when there's more than just two NPCs.
Yep.
And then it becomes the, I have to
sometimes
have a conversation with myself.
Yep.
D4 airs every Sunday and is obviously one of the most popular D&D streaming shows around. You've got 400 hours of content, more than 100 episodes, right? You've done tons of charity streams and more, but obviously it didn't start out that way. It started out with the idea of you doing this streamed show. Whose idea was it to start D4? What was the development process? Like, I'd love to know about the origin of the show and how Devin's pointing at Dustin guiltily. It's like, I did it.
So I touched on this a little bit earlier. So.
Yeah.
I was DMing Out of the Abyss, Rage of Demons campaign. We were going on, I think, the end of 3 years, the bare bones end of it, pushing towards the end, starting to think about the next campaign. When I flew out to LA for Stream of Many Eyes, the second D&D live event that they put on, where they built Waterdeep, and it was super immersive and amazing. They had cosplayers and fight choreographers and live combat, and it was just this awesome immersive experience. And so that got, I was like, I want to do Waterdeep Dragon Heist, because I just lived Waterdeep Dragon Heist. I want that to be the next campaign. And that got the streaming itch in me, because I got to meet a whole bunch of streamers who I am now fortunate enough to call friends and family. We've become so close. And it all sparked from Stream of Many Eyes. And so that got the itch of streaming, and it first started out as, hey, what do you think about streaming the next campaign? I'll get a couple webcams. We'll throw it up around the gaming table. It'll be super low key, just something to document, because we have had a lot of great moments in this past campaign, and I'd love to just document that. It'll be super small, super easy.
Yeah, it'll be set up in our house. It probably won't be, you know, great quality, but hey, it'll be fun. And I was like, yeah, sure, you know. And he's like, well, what do you feel about code DMing? And I was like, that's unique. That might be kind of cool. So yeah, and that'll be a little bit like LARPing, and we will only, you know, we won't commit to like weekly or whatever. It'll just be whenever we can, and be this small thing. And then this goes into the straight from the beginning. Never be afraid to shoot your shot, because the worst they can say is no. And nobody said no.
Yeah, we just kept asking for things and talking to sponsors and partners and pitching our idea, and nobody said no.
Yeah, and it was more so like, hey, we have this idea. We're thinking about doing a stream with two DMs. It's kind of unique. No one's doing it. And we're thinking about doing Waterdeep. And everybody across the board was like trying to get their fingers and stuff into the Waterdeep pot.
And yeah, and then around that time, we just started getting into terrain building, and you know, we were like, well, what if we built all of our maps, because we already hate our free time, so why not make it even more less? So we also used that in our pitch. It's like, we're going to custom build all of our maps and try to use, you know, cheaper materials to kind of show people like, hey, you know, there are phenomenal terrain builders that we learned from out there that inspired us. And so we took those inspirations, and we were like, we're going to do custom maps. Here's a few examples of what we've done. And it just got to the point where we had to put our money where our mouth was. And
there was no other choice. It wasn't one or two said yes, and we can kind of pitch them in our small little segment from time to time, to, oh, we have a bunch of people we have to work for now, and we're really humbled and happy to work for, but we can't put out a bad product.
Yeah, and so that's when we were like, okay, we have to put out a production that is, you know, decent and good. And so yeah, that's when, you know, we partnered with Rock Punch, our production company, and Meeple Madness, which was the home of, for the first half of the campaign, we filmed the episodes in the middle of their store.
Oh, okay.
Which is phenomenal. We owe so much to Meeple Madness, one of, if not the best gaming store.
Yeah, ever
been
to. So good.
And so from there, we built our set, and then COVID hit, and now our beautiful studio set is collecting dust, and we're streaming from home.
Yeah. We have plans of returning, but we want to get better equipment and do a tech rehearsal, which we always take December off because of holidays.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So you'll see us back in studio start of next year.
And I think I want to make a little bit of a segue, because anybody who's listening, I think you said something that was really important. And a lot of people are intimidated by the thought of somebody saying no. And if you get yourself into the mindset of the worst they can do is say no, and ultimately, yeah, that will suck, but if you don't ask, it's definitely no. Because we did, you know, we did, I run a nerd club here in Toronto where I live called Geeks United. And we did a fundraising event for Extra Life, and we raised like $25,000 in 2014. You know, Xbox and Microsoft were our sponsors. Coca-Cola were our sponsors. And they said yes. And if we hadn't asked them, because we were worried about what they would say no. So, you know, for people who are listening who want to put together a stream or a podcast or anything, the worst somebody can do is say no. And what I've learned from being involved in this community for the last couple of years is they might say no, but they'll say, well, maybe another time, or they're not going to be jerks. And most people are pretty cool. So that's the one piece of segue advice that I wanted to provide, because I was...
Yeah, you miss 100% of the shots you don't take. More people will say yes than you're expecting. I'm not saying more people say yes than no, but more people say yes than you're expecting, because you're always expecting everyone to say no.
Mm-hmm.
And 1 out of 10 is still more than 0 out of 10. And like you said, it may not be a yes now. It could be a yes in the future, as long if you meet certain requirements or when they're ready. And then, yes, the reason why people hate the word no is because of the fear of rejection.
Yeah.
But the thing is that the worst they can say, the reason why I say the worst they can say is no is because that doesn't push you back. That only keeps you in the same spot.
Yeah, exactly.
And the only way, you can only move forward. That's the best advice I can give you. Is more people are going to say yes than you think, and no is not pushing you back. It is only keeping you in place temporarily.
Yep.
So the cast of D4 is off the charts. Their chemistry is incredible. The characters, the players, they're effortlessly weaving these complex narratives through the framework of your campaign. What was the process of casting your show like? How did you pull these incredible players together? Like, what was the story?
A lot of people we've played before or played with before in different games, and so we know Ethan from the LARP that we co-ran. Ethan became a really good friend of both of ours. Logan is a friend from the cosplay community because we go to a lot of conventions, and then a Star Wars game that we were playing in. He was a really good player. And then
Rhea is my cousin, and she played in my home game, the Rage of Demons game, right before D4. And I mean, I watched Rhea grow up from teaching her how to play D&D all the way up to where she is now, and I mean, she blew me away in the home game, and I was like, I want you on the stream. I want you to play because you're phenomenal. You know, she'll say it's because she cries on a dime, and that might be a part of it.
It's because she gets really emotionally invested.
Invested, and that's and just blows us out of the water. Goblin Katie, I LARPed with at another game that I played, and just always blew me out of the water with her roleplay and her improv skills. And then Katie Adkins, I worked with years ago on one of my first movies I ever worked on in the film industry in Atlanta. And then Ethan had worked with her at a nerd bar out here in Atlanta. And so, you know, we were looking, and he mentioned her, and I was like, oh my God, that's amazing. Absolutely. We reached out to Katie. Katie was 100% on board. You know, she had just done Too Many Cooks, which if you haven't seen Adult Swim's Too Many Cooks, Katie was the main victim of that. And we put together this cast that none of them had ever played together before D4. But we knew that they would bring it. And yeah, That's what we wanted, because we knew that we wanted to tell an emotionally realistic, Lovecraftian horror, push you to the edge of your seat story. And that's what we knew, the type of story we wanted. So we wanted to make sure that our cast could handle that type of storytelling, because it is a lot, and it can be a lot on you emotionally.
As a player and as a viewer, just so everyone listening is well aware, it is very real, and very heavily emotionally driven, sometimes with some dark storylines, but we do it in a way that does have a positive spin. If we touch on anything that's a little bit too dark, we have charities you can donate to and things like that.
Yeah, that we bring awareness to certain situations that we may touch on and in the in-game world that are parallel to the real world, and we'll kind of use that platform to touch base on that. But we ran a session zero, like a session zero,
to see if they're all compatible.
See if they're all compatible. Not even the ones that we filmed, but just a one shot to go play. Play a character that's your same class, and we'll just want to see how everyone does. And they all excelled, did wonderful in that. And then, yeah, we shot our session zeros back to back, and then we're just, even that was like, wow.
Yeah, we were blown away at the session zeros, and we knew that it was going to be fire.
Yeah.
If anybody watched it or not, we were going to have fun.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, and we just, and to this day, like, we will just, Devin and I will just sit back as our cast steals the scene and like,
just roleplay their asses off.
We are a very slow narrative because we don't ever want to stop their roleplay because they sell it. I mean, and it is some of the best roleplay and improv that I've ever experienced. And I'm we are so fortunate that we have them as our cast members, and we are so fortunate that we've been able to bring in the guests that we have on the show, including our current full-time, long-term guest, Lauren Urban, who plays Orkira. You know, we were so fortunate to have her guest early on in when, you know, she just so happened to be in near Atlanta, in Atlanta, brought her in and introduced the first crossover episode of the D&D multiverse.
Yeah.
Which was a lot of fun. And yeah, every single one of our guests, Mark Meir, Omega Jones, Megan Kinrick, Todd Kinrick, have all just been phenomenal.
Even in one shots like V Muse, HTTT yep. Paladin, and then some of our one shots actually we create narratively to be a side story of
the main canon of D4. Even the Bale Project one shot was a set in Avernus, but canon to D4. So we still try to tie in those
story elements
to that. Ginny D was phenomenal at the
Dragon Con
episode, where we hit her with so much just wildness with donations and voices, and I owe her so much for agreeing to do that, because I don't think she realized what she was getting into when she said yes when I asked her. Thank you, Ginny. I love you.
Yeah, those charity games, they can get wild depending on what's happening. So talking about story a little bit, because you're great in this interview, because I didn't even have to ask my follow-up question on guests. You answered it for me, which is awesome. What's your secret for telling a good story? What are the tips to those who want to create compelling stories in their own games that bring the emotional weight but also have the moments of levity? How do you balance those two things, which are really in some ways opposed, but maybe not as opposed as people might think?
Know your world. Is a big one. One of the things that we love to do is we weave a web. And so when we tell stories, there are always threads that lead to the bigger part of the web. So when you tell the stories, you can have, you know, however many sessions later, that moment to go, oh my God, was that always there?
Always.
But
yeah, so know your world, know your characters, enough to even put like a small little clues, like a big reveal just came out, recently about one of our NPCs. And, we always want to make sure that we put enough threads so that when the reveal happens, it doesn't feel out of character for the NPC, or it doesn't feel like
out of a field or
in the story. Like everything is like sometimes you have to be like, well, here's what you missed, right? Here are the things you saw, and then here's what you missed in the small little details of descriptions. And you don't always have to be overbearing with your clues. Sometimes it can be very subtle, just woven into the description of, you know, when they meet the person, or when you're describing a scene or something like that. So later on you can be like, oh, remember this description, or remember this description, and it all kind of paints the bigger picture together. But as for weaving a bigger narrative and story, know your players also.
Yeah, on that, you know, one of the big things that we do is, you know, we're telling a story together with our players. It's not just Devin and I telling a story for them. All of us at the table are telling the story. And so one of the things we do after every session is, what are your plans for next session? What are your plans for the upcoming session? So that way we are writing a story with them, not for them. And so that to me helps build that narrative better. It helps immerse them into the world, because they feel like they are giving to it and telling the story together. And, you know, that way it flows smoothly and you don't have this kind of hiccup of, you know, what do we do?
So. There are a lot of DMs out there that can improv off the cuff and know their world well enough that they can just, the player's like, I'm going to go do this. And they can instantly pull from that. And that's great. we can't do that, especially since we're Jaegering. We are two separate pilots, and we do say we're one brain cell. We're not a full brain. We like to have their input, so we're prepared. We know what kind of direction they're going for. We can also think about the clues and other things that are hiding in the shadows that they don't know about, and have those prepped for those scenes. So there's always that underlying full narrative arcing storyline that you may not be seeing until the end. To keep it dark and lighthearted, it really, every time you have something that's super dark, try and make your players feel rewarded. That is a big one when they do complete the dark narrative. And then also sometimes just have a weird kooky NPC or a weird kooky a side story that doesn't have as much weight, and that can feel a little bit uplifting and stuff like that to help balance the dark and the light.
Yep.
Got it. Okay. I want to ask you a more general question about D&D, because 5th edition is more popular than Dungeons & Dragons has ever been. Since 2018, it's been the best year every year for D&D. 2019 was its best year, then 2020 was its best year. Now 2021 is its best year, and the year's not even over yet. Why do you think that Dungeons & Dragons has become so popular? What's the catalyst?
There's a lot of factors involved. First, I mean, we have to give credit to one of the greatest streams and groups out there, Critical Role. They weren't the first streaming group, but they are a bunch of very popular nerdy voice actors, as they say.
And they tell amazing stories, and I think they sparked the streaming revolution, I guess you could call it, because it was really they're the ones that kicked off everything. But D&D in itself, and even people who have never played, who sit down at that table, will usually walk away going, wow, that was a lot of fun, because it allows you to step in away from reality for a moment, but also allows you to build relationships and friendships, and even bring forth sides of yourself that you may not even have known were there, that playing a character and rolling dice brings out in you.
I think we're finally out of the detrimental period of what the Satanic Panic caused. And so after the 80s, it took a while for it to come back. But also, all of those kids that were in the 80s are now adults and running things. And so it's in all of cartoons. It's in all of narratives. It's in, like, Stranger Things. They're playing D&D. And that's because the Duffer Brothers played D&D when they were kids. And they were like, let's do that. I believe it's Duffer Brothers.
That sounds right.
That's right.
But the creators of Stranger Things played it when they were kids. And they're like, well, we're gonna put our childhood history into this. And so across the board, just in general, across pop culture, it became more in view of people's eyes. And so I think the curiosity bred, and then there were a lot of avenues for people to watch it and check it out and go, that looks like fun. And then, as Dustin says, as soon as you play, you're like, yeah, okay, this is fun.
There are now, like, D&D clubs and schools, and they use it for team building exercises, because it is a great way to work on teamwork and, you know, camaraderie and all of this other stuff. And I think people are realizing that it's not just a nerdy game, but there's a lot more to it than just, oh, you're a bunch of nerds rolling dice doing math.
It can be used for therapy. It can be
100%. Yeah, absolutely.
It has so many avenues and different ways, depending on how it's played and everything like that, that I really think, because it's just so many things cultivating together at the perfect time with the best edition so far. And 5th edition is easy enough for new players to get into without being bombarded with too much crunch. And there's enough room for role play that it's just the best edition.
Yeah, and I think part of it too is it's streamlined enough, but there also is the ability to crunch a little bit, maybe not as much as Pathfinder, but still, if you're enjoying it, it's there. So they're not declining that option for the people who want to use it. But at the same time, it's so accessible for those new folks who aren't going to get bombarded by, I mean, the combat section is like 30 pages long, if that. I want to talk a little bit about your work in charity, because you and the cast of D4 have been consistently raising money for a bunch of different causes. You've done events for Extra Life. You've done events for Jasper's Game Day, for the Bail Project, and others. You're spending so much time supporting these causes. Why is it important for you to contribute in this way?
It's very important for us to give back, and I mean, and to use our platform to build awareness for these charities, these organizations. You know, our main charity is Extra Life. Children's Healthcare Networks, Children's Healthcare of Atlanta is what we do, is very important to me as a father with two kids. Growing up, spending time in Children's Healthcare of Atlanta, you know, in order to raise money to support children's health is extremely important to us. Same with Jasper's Game Day. Mental health awareness, suicide prevention, like it's an honor for us to be able to bring in and help pull funds for that. Same with our Bell Project, to bring awareness to what happened last year, and we are able to raise tens of thousands of dollars to help those groups and organizations. It's just, at the end of the day, it makes it worth it, because to walk away going, you know what, we did good.
Yeah, that, and without getting political, those people need the money and it's hard to get it. So we're very happy to be a catalyst for bringing people together in order to make those things happen.
Yeah. And we love doing charity events. It is one of the things that we will always do. Hands down, we'll say we will always do charity events.
As long as we have time.
As long as we have time to do it, we will do it. And we'll always push Extra Life. And I mean, even like partnering with Dragon Con for the American Heart Association. Dragon Con always does a charity of the year. And so for us to be able to pull in and make, you know, and pull in the funds for heart, you know, health and stuff like that, it's just phenomenal. And our community is like some of the best. When we don't think they can give any more, they give tenfold more.
Yeah, it's incredibly humbling. Again, as I said, we just like being the catalyst in order to be able to help fund these things that need the money.
Yep.
Yeah. And it's not, and you know, it's not just about fundraising. You obviously have a big platform, so bringing attention to these causes is really important too. It's not just because, you know, people can't always afford to give, but they can share. Even if they have 20 followers, if one person comes to show up at the stream, that contribution matters. Like we do here at Fort Nerd, we run Quest for the Cure, and we're doing a charity called Jesse's Journey. They raise money for Duchenne muscular dystrophy, and people have heard of muscular dystrophy, but Duchenne only affects 1 in 5,000 families, right? You know, when we were raising money for Extra Life, it was easy to say, hey, we are supporting Sick Kids Hospital here in Toronto. It's one of the top 5 children's hospitals in the world. People come from all over to get surgeries done in Sick Kids. Donate. Because everybody has that connection. Everybody knows somebody who was there. But 1 in 5,000 isn't a lot. And so that awareness piece is really important for us too. I know that your show, as you mentioned, was originally in this beautiful set that you constructed, and it was always sort of intended to be an in-person show. And hopefully I'm going to knock on my wooden table and say that as things are continuing, we will open up and conventions will happen again, and maybe in studio recordings will happen again. Do you have any plans to do anything in person, coming back together to do the show, events or conventions anywhere?
We do. We are right now, the tentative plan is first of 2022 to be in studio again. And that, as far as D4 goes, that's the plan. We're gonna stay remote play through the end of the year. Just One, it allows us to keep Lauren on the show for a little bit longer because Lauren is in Seattle, and once we go in studio, unfortunately, Lauren will not be able to join us on the show.
Until she's back in Atlanta until, when it's safe.
Yep, yeah. She's back in Atlanta. But we do have something that just got announced that Devin and I are doing.
It's a little ways off, but you want to get your tickets now.
Yep, and so... middle March, we will be celebrity DMs on D3 at Sea.
Ooh. That is March 2022.
Yep. And we are super excited about that. Tickets are available d3@sea.com. And we are super excited to get
We're going to be sharing a cruise with a bunch of other amazing DMs that, you know, even if you don't want to play with us, you have a slew of other people to choose from. Yep. And we highly recommend every single one of them. And then we're also going to be in the lower, middle America area. I'll say that. I'm not going to spoil exactly where we're going to be, but.
And then we are going to also hopefully start doing conventions next year. We're not going to do anything this year. We're going to basically just focus on just staying safe and getting everything going. But 2022, we're hoping to kick up our convention season again. And so we're hoping to do some live shows there. Definitely be, check out d4dnd.com for updates on where we will be and our convention schedule and all of that. Other than that, I have a Jasper's Game Day stream that I'm doing July 10th. I am DMing with an amazing group of people, two of which donated to sit at the table, and so I'm excited to do that.
You're also doing something else that you can't fully announce, but we can say, hey, go check your on your Twitter.
Stay on my socials. Hopefully it'll be announced soon. Fingers crossed. But yeah, there are lots of things in the works that Devin and I are doing that we can't quite talk about yet, but hopefully soon we will be able to talk about.
Yeah, come follow us on follow Dustin and D4. You follow me on Twitter. It's Devin is not here because I don't tweet.
Yeah.
as handles go, it's pretty appropriate.
It is pretty appropriate.
No, D3 at Sea. It's incredible that you guys are joining. I know B. Dave Walters is going to be there. I know Mark Meir is going to be there. And of course, friend to the Cocktie Podcast, Talon and Claw is one of the amazing sponsors. So definitely check out D3 at Sea. I will put the link in the show notes for everybody because I think it's going to be worth coming. I'm not a boat guy. Otherwise, I'd go. but I really want to say thank you to both of you for joining me today. It was great to talk to you and learn a little bit more about D4 and how this amazing partnership came to exist.
Thanks for having us. I will say I mentioned my socials and I didn't actually tell you what my socials were. So you can follow D4 at D4DND RPG across all social media platforms or our website, D4DND.com. And then I am at Flash Fletch on Twitter. If you follow the D4 socials, everything you need to know will be through that.
And if you want to follow me for whatever reason, it is at Devin is not here. And that is D-E-V-A-N. I sometimes like things. I'll like things.
Retweet things every now and then?
Yeah. That's mainly for pushing what we're doing.
Oh, okay,
But I'll like things and I may comment on some posts, but I don't personally tweet.
I will make sure to include those in the show notes for everybody so they've got a quick ability to go there real soon. But I hope to see you both at a charity D&D table again in the very near future.
Cannot wait.
That's our show for this week. Thanks so much for listening. If you haven't subscribed yet, well, okay, but would you? It's always good having you join me, and remember, if the die is cocked, it doesn't count. I look forward to chatting with you again next week.
Yay!